Welcome to another Leon China Report, and we have another eclectic show. We have a musical director from the Volksbühne and also the executive director, Zalman Lutik. Zalman, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Leon. Delighted to be here.
You're a great musician, Juilliard trained, and I see you're into the Yiddish theater. Why don't you go to Lincoln Center and play for the New York Philharmonic?
Well, you know, I was brought up in a home where Yiddish was a living and breathing entity.
Where were your parents from?
My father was born in Poland. He spent the war years in Shanghai. My mother born in Brooklyn. And they came together from the Weinreich Yiddish course out in UCLA. And from when I was a little kid, I just remember the vibrant sounds of Yiddish filling my house.
Now, people who spoke Yiddish at that time weren't necessarily Orthodox Jews or religious Jews.
No, not actually. I mean, Yiddish was the lingua franca of Eastern European Jews,
right,
in general. And they came to America, everybody spoke Yiddish.
Right.
Then it was about wanting to become Americans. So, but I come originally from a non-religious household.
I'll tell you why I say that. Yeah. When I was in the Soviet Union, trying to bring Jews out of the Soviet Union, people would talk to me in Yiddish, and they were KGB agents.
Right.
And it was Kagebaga, and I couldn't get over that. The fact that this was, in a sense, the language of my people, and these people were trapping me into admissions of quasi-criminal activities,
right,
in the synagogue. That's why, a lot of people think if you speak Yiddish, you're an Orthodox Jew, or at least a very religious Jew. It's not true. It was the language of the people.
Right, and Yiddish really, it transcends every part of the Jewish spectrum. I mean, you have, the Yiddish culture accompanied the Jewish people from the early ages.
Well, it's a mixture of German and a lot of Slavic languages.
And Hebrew and Slavic languages, but it has a literature and music and culture of its own. And the Volksbühne, the Yiddish theater that I run, we're committed to making sure that this language and this culture be heard for generations to come. Because we believe that as American Jews, we have a part of that in our DNA.
What does YIVO do? YIVO is an institute.
YIVO is a research institution that houses the world's largest collection of documents. But what we do is bring the material alive.
Theater
and music. We did 168 performances this year. It was our 90th season. All bilingual. So we're not talking about anybody's, no one's left in the cold.
So you get non-Jewish people coming?
We get non-Jewish. For our recent show on Second Avenue that Mike Burstein started and that we're going to be bringing back in the fall, had non-Jewish people come in, and they had a great time.
Who wrote on Second Avenue?
I wrote it with my cousin Moshe Rosenfeld.
And what's it about?
It's a musical travelogue through the golden age of Second Avenue. We take you to that time when, how many theaters were running on Second Avenue? 20, 30 at the same time. Thousands of Jews were going to the theater all the time. Why? Because this was...
Are you able to get young people to the theater?
We're getting young people. The interesting thing is that the show is completely in English. The songs are in Yiddish. And everything is in super titles. So all the Yiddish you see translated on top, and the dialogue is in English. So we're giving people a taste in the language that they can understand about what this vibrant time was. We're talking about, the Al Jolsons, the Eddie Cantors, Danny Kaye, they all came to the Yiddish theater.
Right.
It's all documented. We know it. So here we are bringing this to life in a way that, I brought my son's class. He goes to the Schechter in Manhattan. He's a high school grad.
What is Schechter?
The Solomon Schechter of the high school.
The
school. He's graduated. I brought their whole graduating class as a gift to them to see it. They never saw anything like it.
Well, the audience should understand Zero Mostel, Red Buttons.
Sure.
All of these fellows came out of the Yiddish
Walter
theater.
Walter Matthau,
yeah. Jack Benny,
right.
George Burns. The
right.
whole comedy of the 20th century. Really came
and
from
then
the
take
Yiddish
it a take it a couple of generations closer to us. I mean, you have to look at Neil Simon. You have to look at Billy Crystal. You have to look at Seinfeld as nods to that great time, to that time of Yiddish vaudeville.
But you think that they speak Yiddish?
You bet.
Billy Crystal.
Have you seen 700 Sundays?
I did.
Yeah. So there's a lot of Yiddish in there.
Well, it wasn't the whole show in Yiddish.
No. And neither is ours. You know, it's not we're not looking to convert people to speaking in Yiddish. We
want to keep the culture alive.
Yeah, and we feel that it's an important part of the comedy.
By the way, in Yiddish cannot be replaced.
That's right.
Shalom Aleichem and
right.
his comedy
and the music.
There's things you can say in Yiddish that no one can replicate in English. There's no way.
No, and the music. I mean, the music is an international, universal language. So you hear some Yiddish music, some klezmer music. It goes straight to your kitschkes. I'm the artistic director of the National Yiddish Theater. And the music director of tonight's evening, and basically it was my idea to celebrate our 100th anniversary with this celebration of this iconic musical that was written for the American stage, a piece that I would call them geniuses: Joe Stein, Sheldon Harnick, Jerry Bock, Jerry Robbins, and of course Hal Prince conceived of this piece based on the Shalom Aleichem stories. And that's the connection for us as we, the National Yiddish Theater, goes into our 100th anniversary. We thought, what better way than to take this piece of this icon of the American musical theater and celebrate its resonance and longevity. And as you no doubt have heard, Fiddler has been performed more than any musical ever written. It's translated in every language. There isn't a day in the 50 years that Fiddler hasn't been performed all over the world. So in our own way, we're celebrating this historic moment.
If I were a rich man, all day long I'd biddy-biddy-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a biddy-biddy rich, idle, diddle, title, diddle man.
51 years ago, I met this guy. Yeah. We did a film called Salach Shabbati.
Yeah.
And
this
man is Yoram Gaon.
Not bad.
This man is the legendary Chaim Topol. And we did a film in 1963 when I came to Israel with my family. And there was a film called Salach.
We did a tourist in the film.
Yes. Uh-huh. So my family and I, my parents and I, and he was in the, it was a scene in the, oh, first of all, when we arrived on the plane, Salah is counting his children, and I'm counting my suitcases.
Right.
And I said, excuse me, and you said, in Allah Abu, and I said, thank you. And then there's a scene in the forest where we come to see the trees that they planted
in their name.
Yes, so there's one family. You know the story. But this is Chaim Ge. And then, a few years later,
I came to see him playing in the Yiddish theater.
In the Megillah.
In the Megillah.
With my parents.
And your parents, and I knew his parents were on there, right?
No.
I'm sorry to hear that. But they were wonderful parents and a sister. And it was a lovely, lovely family, really.
And then a few years later, Chaim got the call to London to do Fiddler.
Yeah.
And he knew very little English.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so one day...
I asked him to go with me through the songs.
The lines in English, because I was born in New York.
But he had an American accent.
Yes,
it wasn't good enough.
It was.
So I took a British-speaking English.
Because I was from New York.
They saw Salah. He mentioned Salah. Salah was a film that I played when I was 27. I played it 55 years old. And they saw the film. It ran here in the Carnegie for about a year. So they thought it was a good idea for Fiddler in Europe to ask that old man.
The old man, the 26, 7-year-old man.
So I came, I was then, I don't know, 20, Sunday set? I said, no, no, I played the old man. So they let me see, go on stage, and thank God, I mean, they made a mistake and took me. But let me tell you that the character that you see in the film, my teacher, or the one that really opened my eyes how to play that play, that part, was Rodensky. I watched him and I thought that's the way to go, and then I shared. He was a little older than I was, so he couldn't do 8 performances, so I shared with him. I did 4, he did 4, and I learned every night I went to and went to see him. And if you see whatever you see on the screen, at least half of it is Rodensky.
No, nobody can supersede what he did in the film, and it's La Netzach, as we say. It will be forever. Yeah, you know, it's a great.
It's really a great gift. I mean, to have that gift. I mean, I admit.
If that's not love, what is?
Then you love me.
I suppose I do.
And I suppose I love you too.
I'm Moshe Rosenfeld. I am the producer of this amazing event, Raising the Roof, and very proud to be producing yet another gala for the National Yiddish Theater Volksbühne, which is my beloved spiritual home and my cause. So that's why we're here tonight. I was in Sophie's Choice. I was in A Midsummer Night's Sex Comedy. I was in Avalon. I was in Crossing the Lancy. I played the Moyle in the Bris scene. Not the other scene. The lead role in the Bris scene was the Moyle. Well, I began as an actor, as we say, but had an opportunity to create a few musicals with my cousin Zalman Lotek, who's standing right behind the camera. And as a writer and creator, also had the opportunity to produce all of these musicals, The Golden Land on Second Avenue, and Those Were the Days, which ended up on Broadway and garnered 2 Tony nominations. I think it's a very, it's an organic relationship. Yiddish theater exists to perpetuate the memory and the culture of Eastern European Judaism and Jewry, and Fiddler on the Roof just absorbed that very culture and created a legacy for the entire world to mirror that life of Anatevka, which was symbolic of all the shtetls that were destroyed eventually in the Holocaust. But our thousand-year culture is a very important source of emotional Judaism. And, you know, our identities as Jews are shaped and informed by that culture. The Yiddish is just part of the Jewish identity. And for us to let it disappear and not to hear it is something that we can't allow. We need it for ourselves. We need it for our children. It makes us better people to be connected to that world, that ethical culture that Sholem Aleichem wrote about and that the creators of Fiddler inherited.
All right. So you're now the executive director, and you got a big thing coming up at Carnegie Hall on June 16th.
We do, and we're delighted that Mandy Patinkin has, he recorded this album.
He speaks Yiddish, Mandy.
He doesn't speak Yiddish, but he learned these Yiddish songs. He was a good friend of Joe Papp. And Joe Papp said to him once,
Joe Papp was
the producer of the Public Theater.
Right.
He came to Mandy and says, I want you to learn a Yiddish song, my favorite one, Yossel Yossel. So he learned it for Joe Papp, and since then he learned that, he became so enamored with the language that he decided to do a whole album called Mama Lushin. And he came
Explain
to
that
us
to the audience.
Mama Lushin means mother tongue, And that's the way, that's how Jews refer to Yiddish, as Mama Lushin, as the mother tongue. He looked through 50 songs. He came to me and my cousin Moshe and some other people and to research a song, to hear the language, to hear us play them. And then he took them and he took the top Broadway arrangers, conductors, and he made an incredible album of it. And he's agreed to do it for us on the stage of Carnegie Hall as his New York debut.
Who was the greatest Yiddish actor, do you think?
Aaron Lebedev, Molly Picon, maybe, you know, I mean, with Maury Schwartz.
Yeah, they had a lot of them.
Yeah.
It was Second Avenue. Everybody used to go on Sunday nights.
But it wasn't just, you know, frivolity, you know. There was serious, you know, people heard Shakespeare for the first time, you know.
Right.
There's a story that one person, when they were so enamored with Shakespeare, that at the end of Hamlet, they wouldn't let the actors go off the stage until their screams of author, author, wouldn't bring out the author. So.
All right, so you're going to be at Carnegie Hall on June 16th, and you're going to have a gala there.
Yeah,
and,
we're trying to raise money for the Yiddish theater, for the future of Yiddish in this country.
And you got Eli Wallach and Ann Jackson going to make a show there?
We're delighted that we're honoring them for their lifelong work. We're also honoring Fred Zeidman, the chairman of the Holocaust Council, for his contributions, and Barry Slotnick as well. I mean, these are major people in the American field and Jewish field who have made a contribution to the Jewish name. To the Jewish name, what, you know, their connection to Yiddish. They have a feeling for Yiddish.
Don't think Yiddish will disappear?
It can't. It's a part of our DNA. It's, you know, whether we our mission is to transmit it in a way that young people who have no nostalgic connection to it at all can find something in it that's real.
Years ago, if you would go to Israel, people didn't want to hear Yiddish.
No. Well, we know that Yiddish...
They wanted to be Sabra's tough, and they didn't want to hear about the...
Rak Ivrit.
And not only that, but it reminded them of the diaspora where the Jew they thought was weak.
Well, now we realize what a big mistake that was, because that generation of Israelis lost that culture. Now they're interested in it again. Then it was an important thing to do, to establish a uniformity, in terms of one language.
You know, broke through in Yiddish, and I knew him fairly well, Sholem Secunda.
Sure.
He wrote Bamir Bistushain, which was recorded by the Andrews sisters in days when Yiddish was not on the radio, in normal radio, and he broke through, and it was a huge hit.
Huge hit.
And Secunda was actually a very talented musician.
Khan, yeah, Sammy Khan wrote the English melody for it, English words for it. Sammy Khan and Saul Chaplin took it, and...
Are you still conducting yourself?
Yeah, I have a chorale. I have a 30-voice chorale that specializes in Yiddish music. We do Gilbert and Sullivan in Yiddish. You know, we do important, you know, Yiddish dramatic works.
So this is your life.
It is. I'm committed to making sure that people of my generation and my kids' generation can have access
to this.
Can
your kids speak Yiddish?
Yeah, actually, I do speak Yiddish to my kids.
You know who speaks Yiddish? The Hasidim.
Yeah.
But they don't go to your shows.
No. Actually, you'd be surprised. They come late.
They come late?
Yeah. They come Shabbos after Shabbos.
Saturday night?
Yeah, Shabbos. They come Saturday night at the, you know, after Shabbos, and they come.
But they listen to a woman's voice? I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Some do.
Really?
Yeah. No.
It's a Jewish law, if you're very Orthodox, that you're not allowed to hear the voice of a woman.
Right.
And so many of these Hasidic people don't, or men at least, don't go to hear music. But I guess there's extremes or not extremes. I mean, it's what you believe in. It's admirable what you're doing. It's cultural.
Yeah.
And you're keeping it alive.
And we're trying to make sure that this language and culture that people... have some connection to, and we produce a children's show called Kids in Yiddish. It's sort of a Saturday Night Live meets Sesame Street.
Really?
Introduction for young parents, parents in their 20s and 30s, bringing their kids. They have no nostalgic connection to Yiddish, but they've heard about it. They bring their kids because they want to see it, and the kids love it. It's mostly in English, and we do Yiddish versions of, you know, popular English melodies. So,
it's called the Volksbühne.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Peace means taking into account the dignity of other people and the fact that there are other people who have certain rights.
Peace in the Middle East basically will come when the clergy in the mosque on Friday preach it, and when the rabbis in the synagogue on Saturday preach it. During the time of Camp David, one, you had political leadership that was able to contain that type of religious fervor. What the country needs is some prescient understanding of what is going to happen in the future.
Tune in when the Leon Charney Report begins a special series on the Israeli-Palestinian question.
So don't accept defeat.
Now you can get covered in steel.
Buy me treats.
You take care of your pets. Now it's their turn to take care of you. Visit GetCoveredAmerica.org to learn about your health insurance options.
Thanks for calling the GED Pep Talk Center. Jerry Siller speaking. Your level 7 in your face pep talk.
I can keep pushing. Believe me, I'm good at it. But at some point, you're going to need to start pushing yourself.
See, once you've got your GED diploma, you'll feel so good about yourself.
You tell them.
You can't change your past, but you can definitely change your future.
That makes me so happy, I'm ready to bust out a dance.
Mr. Trejo, can I transfer this guy to you? My gentle technique isn't really working. You need something a little more...
persuasive?
Yes!
You listen, and you listen good.
Hey, where's my sandwich?
Terry?
Terry!
Take it from me to King DMC. It's a real cool thing to get your GED.
Get that diploma!
Now hold on and we'll find you free GED classes. Capiche?
Whatever motivation you need, we've got a pep talk for you. Get your GED pep talk and find free classes at yourged.org.
I wish I was in school.
If only I had a math test today.
I'll stay after class.
I'll clean the chalkboard.
I wish I was in school.
School ends, but free lunches for your kids don't have to. Find your local food bank at feedingamerica.org/summermeals for help.
There's a shelter pet who wants to meet you. Meet one today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org. Adopt.
Hey, everybody. Heart disease affects 1 in every 3 women in America, but you can fight back. There's no time to lose. Mothers, sisters, daughters, families, and friends, it's time to shout louder, stand stronger, and demand change. Let's go!
To the Batmobile.
To the invisible jet!
Dang it.
Together, we can put an end to heart disease. It's time to go red for women. I could use your help. Yeah! Learn more from the American Heart Association at www.goredforwomen.org.
So who's going to do what?
I'll pack the dead batteries.
Great.
I'll only put what I don't need into a duffel bag.
Perfect. That's totally unhelpful.
No problem.
Meanwhile, I will try to comfort everyone by speaking in a calm voice. And who is going to handle supplies?
I can forget to do a list for us.
Thanks, pal.
We couldn't be any less prepared. I'm proud of you guys.
Talk to your kids about who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Search Ready Kids at nyc.gov or call 311.
Here's to the things that can keep us safe. Those we use all the time with hardly a thought. Those that are silently standing by to save our lives. And now, those that we carry with us everywhere we go. Many mobile devices will now bring you wireless emergency alerts, real-time information directly from local sources you know and trust. With a unique sound and vibration, you'll be in the know, wherever you are.
Sure. Yeah.
Plus, it's one of the many ways to fight osteoarthritis pain. For more information on managing pain, go to fightarthritispain.org.
We're back. This is a Leon Chani report. We've got the inimitable Mike Burstyn.
Tonight is going to be a very emotional evening because I grew up in the Yiddish theater, and Sholem Aleichem, you know, the father of Fiddler on the Roof, wrote in Yiddish. And so to me, it's more than just a musical. And I've done Fiddler twice. I did Fiddler. The first production was quite unusual. It was in Salt Lake City, Utah. It was a Mormon production. Fiddler on the Roof. And I couldn't understand what the Mormons have to do with Fiddler on the Roof, but they believe that it's written for them. And they went through the same kind of tragedy and troubles. They were driven from place to place. They had to schlep their wagons across the plains, and they wound up in Zion. They live in Zion. And they love this musical because it's tradition. So I did it once, Tevye, in Salt Lake City, Utah, and then I did it again a second time in Westchester Broadway Theater. So I love the part. It's something that I, you know, I feel and I love. Well, Zero Mostel, the original Tevye, was very close to the Yiddish theater. And as a matter of fact, Zero performed at my bar mitzvah in 1958 at the National Theater on 2nd Avenue and Houston Street. My father, instead of throwing a party for my bar mitzvah, he rented a theater in the tradition of the Yiddish theater, and he sold out the theater. And he invited many of his friends to come and perform in my honor, my sister and myself, my twin sister. And one of them was Zero Mostel. He was a friend of my father's, and he came and performed. And Zero had the tradition of the Yiddish theater. And actually, Fiddler on the Roof, if it had been written 20 or 30 years earlier, it probably would have been a Yiddish musical and not an English musical, because it came from the tradition of the Yiddish theater. And all the shtickalach that Zero used to do came from the Yiddish theater, from 2nd Avenue.
We are having one big celebration. It's our the end of our 99th season, the beginning of our 100th season, and we're launching it tonight with the 50th anniversary of Fiddler on the Roof. We all understand that Fiddler on the Roof had its roots in Sholem Aleichem, Tevye the Milchiker. He wrote several short stories that were then combined to put together this wonderful production of Fiddler on the Roof, and the rest is history. But it's fascinating to see how much of Sholem Aleichem is really in the original Broadway production. Quite extraordinary to have the amount of Yiddish in the play. We hear L'chaim, to life. We hear a multitude, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. There's a multitude of Yiddish words right in the lyrics and in the text of Fiddler on the Roof. I think what's fascinating about Fiddler on the Roof is it's very, very true to its roots. And there are no excuses being made in the production. They went all out, kept the spirit of the play, kept the Yiddishkeit in the play, and that honesty, the honesty of the play, is integral to its success.
It's just that I'm
together.
Well, for me,
celluloid in the film, I really still get emails from all over the world. And it really is, as my parents told me, it would be my calling card forever. And also, as an American Jew and someone who's an educator, I really feel it tells the immigrant experience once you get to America. And I know that is probably the post story, but for me it resonates there as well.
I'm just going to add one more thing about Neva. When Neva and I did The Golden Land together, I remember we would leave the stage door and everyone would always say, Hava, Hava, Hava. And I said, is that a blessing or a curse? And you said, curse me again. Because it really is. It's changed your life. And for me to work with you originally was, and now, you know, it's still a big honor. But when we did The Golden Land together, I learned so much from Neva because of her experience and her life in the theater and then her experience in, on Broadway. And then I wound up afterwards working with Topol on Broadway. And
not to mention the children. Because everything we've done, we pass on, and you'll see tonight, the children sing in Yiddish thanks to Joanne's.
Experience through all of this is the number of productions in Yiddish and in English, but also the Volksbühne has been producing Yiddish theater for almost 100 years now, right? It's our 100th anniversary, and we've had the opportunity to work with the Volksbühne in the Golden Land on 2nd Avenue. Those were the days. I did the revival on 2nd Avenue, but also I have a project at the Volksbühne called Kids in Yiddish, and the idea is to teach Yiddish to children so their parents won't understand them. I mean, a lot of what we did was to take the immigrant guilt away from Yiddish, and we made it a language for the young people. So these kids who are singing Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish today, they're doing it because they're honoring the culture and not because it's something old-fashioned or something that they want to kind of get rid of. It's very modern in their heads because they don't know anything else.
And about the melting pot that America is, because you'll see it's a diverse group of children, not only children who are being raised.
And even if you're not, there's more to life than that. Don't ask me what.
Well, next year we're going to be celebrating 100 years of Yiddish theater with an extraordinary festival where all the existing Yiddish theaters of the world are going to be presented. Romania, Poland, Canada, South America. And I think it's going to be an extraordinary event. Film, theater, a symposium, music, an entire week of extraordinary musicians and music. So we're looking forward to our 100th year and celebrating with all New Yorkers. As we say, the Shtetl New York will have a party like it never saw before.
After 25 years, it's nice to know.
Peace means taking into account the dignity of other people and the fact that there are other people who have certain rights.
Peace in the Middle East basically will come when the clergy in the mosque on Friday preach it and when the rabbis in the synagogue on Saturday preach it. During the time of Camp David, one, you had political leadership that was able to contain that type of religious fervor. What the country needs is some prescient understanding of what is going to happen in the future.
Tune in when the Leon Chani Report begins a special series on the Israeli-Palestinian question.
Throw away money on wasted electricity. You're throwing away everything you could have bought with it. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Kitchen surfaces, utensils, and hands with soapy water. 1 in 6 Americans will get sick from food poisoning this year. Keep your family safer. Check your steps at foodsafety.gov.
Hey, going out like that?
Yeah, why?
Well, what would the neighbors think?
I see you! Come look at Mr. Feather!
Look what I have.
Mr. Bird, remember? We're just playing. We're just playing. I'm trying to get you out of here.
Even still.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you.
Can you consent with me? Imagine what you'd see if every child had a book to read.
Cause every kid across the nation deserves a book to read. And we can make it happen right now.
No, I don't know what you've been told.
Read to a child today and spark a lifetime of ambition.
Know what?
What?
Since I got adopted, I've learned a lot about these humans.
I know. I mean, check out these two. It's Flirt City over here.
Yeah, I noticed that. It looks like my human is definitely into your human.
Oh, look! I think she's getting his number.
Nice.
Your human's got some sweet moves.
Takes after his dog. Oh, look, they're doing that thing where they put their arms around each other.
She kicked up a leg. It's like in the movies.
That's awesome. Looks like we're going to be hanging out a little bit more.
The average text takes your eyes off the road for nearly 5 seconds.
Wow, these are really good.
You act surprised. Practice makes perfect.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you.
Traditional light bulbs actually generate 9 times more heat than light. Switch to Energy Star light bulbs, and you'll realize just how much cash you are really burning through. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Everything about Barnum's Museum was spectacular, including the price. $1. Now, that might seem a bit steep, but it was worth it. Just look at what I gave them.
Quite a lot of Roman terracotta. Living lava from the flanks of Etna. Statuary, ride a dromedary. See the temple tumble in the Red Sea Park. McNamara's band, the fattest lady in the land. A pickle prehistoric and a strand of Pocahontas hair. Crow as you will go and to be showing you some rowing through a model of the rapids of the Delaware. Armadillas, clever caterpillars. Reproductions of the Cyclops, retina, crystal flowing, automatic sewing, Venus on a shell, and other works of art. Educated fees and drive of aborigines, the ladies joined across the knees, the Mona Lisa made of ice, hot and hot and duck and forgotten spots of cotton gin and night with lots of salt and leather. See that twice. One iguana, snakes and another fauna. Got no bearded lady, but we're getting her. When you duck out, you take another buck out. Run around the block and see you run around the block and see you run around the block and see your new show start. Quite a lot of Roman terracotta. Living lava from the flanks of Etna. Statuary, right in dromedary. See the temple tumble on the Red Sea part. McNamara's rabbit head is laying in the lap of pickle trees. Star Academy's red of Pocahontas hair. Pros who are going to be showing you some Romans through a model of the rabbits on the Delaware. Armadillas, clever caterpillars. Reproductions of the cyclops with that crystal blowing. Automatic sewing. Venus on a shell, another work so far. Educated fees and private average. And equally enjoyed because you need them only. One iguana, snakes, another fauna. Got no beaded lady, but when get done. When you duck out, you take another buck out. Run around the block and see you 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 new show start.
Woo! Oh, Herr Pulig, my collega, the director of Barnum.
Welcome to the Leon Chani Report, where you have a very eclectic program today. We have a brilliant engineer, and we have an engineer of music. We have the inimitable Mike Burstyn, who just got released from prison. Mike, what happened?
I was a prisoner on Second Avenue for about a month and a half.
For how? A month and a half?
We did a...
Where?
At the American Jewish Theater on 26th Street. It wasn't even on Second Avenue, actually. But we did a revival of Neil Simon's Prisoner of Second Avenue. They do four shows a year there, so this was the first in a series of four, and it was very very enjoyable.
Compare it to Barnum, Mike.
Not much easier, because I had to go through a nervous breakdown every night. You saw the show, and it's about a man who lives in New York, loses his job, an advertising executive, and every show I had to really go through a nervous breakdown. It's not easy.
But I saw you wire walk in Barnum. Yeah. That was a little harder than having a nervous breakdown with a good-looking lady next to you. I mean, it wasn't so hard to have a nervous breakdown with that lady. What was the name of the actress?
Lynn Green. Yeah.
She's a beautiful woman.
Yes, Lynn
Green. You didn't look like you were suffering so much.
I'm an actor. I'm supposed to make people think that I'm enjoying this. But Barnum was physically the most difficult thing I've ever done. I just did it in Holland for a year. Just got back from doing it in the Dutch version. And you speak Dutch?
No, speak a little Dutch to me.
Goedenavond, hoe gaat het? We zijn hier vanavond met Leon Chani.
I hedged that this morning. We got a rate of about 750.
Actually, Dutch is not a language. It's a throat disease.
That's you know what papiamento is?
Papiamento is a language.
Right.
Yes.
It's half Dutch and half German.
They speak it in Suriname.
In the...
Dutch West Indies.
In the Netherlands Antilles.
Right.
They have documents. I went to law school there. That's why I practice so heavily today. I learned everything in papiamento with Israeli clients. So you can imagine how much malpractice I've had.
You've had a very varied background.
Mike Burstyn, I guess the foremost entertainer to have come out of Israel. But you really weren't born in Israel. You're an itinerant, Mike.
Well.
The son of very famous actor and actress. Lillian Lux is your mom.
Right.
And Dad, Pesach Bernstein.
That's right.
One of the most famous Yiddish actors of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw Dudu Fischer do that piece that your father originated.
Yes.
Called Figaro instead of Figaro.
That's right, yes.
Are you getting royalties?
No, but it would be nice if Dudu would mention where it came from. But it's a piece that Dad did started doing many years ago, where instead at the Barber of Seville. And instead of Figaro, he says Shvigaro, and it's the story of a matchmaker who's trying to bring together matches, and the problem is the Shvigaro. The mother-in-law is a Shvigaro.
So, Mike, you were born where? Argentina?
No, the best-kept secret.
This is a geography course.
Yes,
now. Okay.
I was born right here in New York. I was born in the Bronx.
Really?
On the Grand Concourse. And we lived on Second Avenue at the time, which was, as you know, the center of the Yiddish theater.
Right.
There were still, at that time, about 14 Yiddish theaters between Houston and 14th Street on 2nd Avenue. And some of the greatest
Give me
actors.
The five greatest Jewish actors in this century.
Well, Jacob P. Adler, who was the founder of the Adler dynasty, and his daughter is still now one
Stella?
Of the great... Stella is still one of the great teachers still teaching acting in New York. There was Tomaszewski, Ludwig Zatz. There was
Menashe
Skolnick, Molly Picon. Molly is the last of the Mohicans. Molly is still alive.
Molly lives in the place, my house, where I live.
Yes, I haven't seen her in many years. There was Aaron Lebedev in the musical comedy field. And my father, may rest in peace, was a great... Maury Schwartz. I was lucky to still work with Maury Schwartz when I was 11 years old in the Yiddish Art Theater here in New York.
Was Paul Muni first the Yiddish actor?
Yes, Paul Muni started out as a young boy with Maury Schwartz. As a matter of fact, he was in his teens, and this is a true story, and he played Schwartz's father. Yes, he had a gray beard on and a wig and a yarmulke. He played a religious father. And when he wasn't on stage, he used to skate outside in the back of the theater. He'd put a pair of roller skates on. In those days, you could, you know, screw them onto your shoes. And when he wasn't working, they'd see this old man with the beard skating around the back of the theater. And then he went to Hollywood. There were many that came out of the Yiddish theater. Edward G. Robinson.
What was his name in the Yiddish theater?
Edward G. Robinson? I don't know, but it certainly wasn't Edward G. Robinson.
No, Robinson Jr., that's for sure. It wouldn't be a big hit on Second Avenue.
I met so many people in later years that I couldn't believe who started out in the Yiddish theater. Leonard Nimoy, who plays Mr. Spock
really?
In Star Wars, speaks a beautiful Yiddish and started out as a young actor with Maury Schwartz. I met him once in California, and he told me this. Walter Matthau.
What's his name, Matthau?
I think that's his real name, but Walter Matthau started out selling candy in Brooklyn.
His buddy, Jack Lemmon, is a fairly good friend of mine. We spent about 2-3 weeks in Israel together. Lemmon is a graduate of Harvard. Very few people know that. Brilliant, brilliant actor, obviously. And he and Matthau are unbelievably close, and they team up well together. But not that many people know that Matthew's background comes from Yiddish theater.
Yes.
I thought Jack Lemmon came from the Yiddish theater.
No,
and he told me he's Irish.
And he, as a matter of fact, did the film version of Prisoner of Second Avenue. Jack Lemmon did.
No wonder you two guys look alike.
Oh, sure.
You're going to play Dad next week. Shave the middle of your head, you'll be in business. All right, so you were born in the Bronx.
Born in the Bronx, raised on Second Avenue for the first 7 years of my life. And then
my parents... Yiddish when...
No, not yet. In 1952, I traveled with my parents to join them for a season of Yiddish theater in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, with my twin sister. I have a twin sister. And since we were there on stage, as a little chendel, which was a cute thing, somebody suggested, pushed us up on stage, we were little kids at the time, and said, why don't you go and sing with Daddy and Mommy? And we went out and sang a song. And the audience loved it so that my father saw, he knew a good thing when he saw one. And he said, okay, we'll keep him in the act. And from that moment on, I have been a professional performer. With my parents in their Yiddish theater, we traveled throughout South America. We came to France in 1953. I went to school in France. In Argentina, I learned Yiddish.
How many languages Yiddish school. Do you speak?
I speak 8 languages.
8?
Yeah. I went to a Yiddish school in Argentina. I learned Spanish there. Then in France, I went to a school and learned French. Then we moved to Israel in 1954 for the first time, and I picked up Hebrew. We traveled down to South Africa and always performing in Yiddish musical comedy.
Why do people sometimes refer to you as an Israeli entertainer?
Because since 1962, I've been living in Israel. Israel's been my home. And I switched from my father's theater to the Hebrew theater. I was very lucky in 1965 to get the lead in a film, the first Israeli musical called Kuni Lemel, the two Kuni Lemels. And I won the Israeli Oscar for that. It's called the Kinor David, David's Harp. And my career took off in the Hebrew theater, films. We did two sequels to Kuni Lemel. We did a film, another film called Hershele, about a Russian immigrant.
We're going to show a clip of that
later. We have
later.
A clip from that. And I had my own television shows in Israel for many years. I won several Israeli song festivals, children's song festivals, made record albums. So since 1962... And in 1978, I was lucky to get a break in Holland, of all places. I did a special for Israel's 30th anniversary, and they offered me my own variety show in Holland. And I had that for 4 years, and as a result of that, I was brought over to do Barnum in New York in 1981. So I've been
the highlight of your career so far?
In the United States, yes. Yes,
Barnum?
Yeah, it was.
And the highlight of, what would you say was the most emotional thing you've ever done in Israel? Aside from when you and I appeared together.
Oh, aside from that.
At the Defense Ministry.
Yes, oh, that's right. And at your birthday,
that's
the first time we met.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the most emotional moment, there were two emotional moments, I'd say. One was when I was performing during the Six-Day War.
Where were you?
I was in the South. And I got down, we went past Rafiach to El Arish. It was on the second day of the war.
Knowing you, because you like to scuba dive, you wanted to get down.
I wanted to get
quick.
Close to the water. No, it wasn't that pleasant at the time. We were in the rear of General Tal's division, and we were entertaining, as crazy as it sounds, every night after the fighting. We would get a couple of jeeps together.
No,
they'd shine
crazy,
their lights on, and we would sing in the sand for the soldiers. And it was either the second or the third day. Late in the afternoon, we got past Rafiach, and we stopped to listen to the radio every hour. And we were standing around, and the radio came on, and it was a live broadcast from the Western Wall, the broadcast when General Gorin, who was the chief rabbi of the Defense Forces, reached the Western Wall and said the Shehecheyanu. And we were standing here, it was all of us crying.
Shehecheyanu to our audience in Borneo and Burma who look at us.
And on Wall Street.
On Wall Street is a blessing that one gives that they have come to live to such a occasion or situation.
To see this day.
Right.
And everybody started singing Jerusalem of Gold. And we heard this over a little transistor radio.
Naomi Shemer's
theme. And that was probably the most moving moment of my life in Israel. And the second was on the first anniversary of my father's death. I took one of his plays, one of his famous Yiddish musical comedies, and in his honor, instead of having a memorial service, I figured he would probably like it much better if I put on one of his plays. So I performed one of his famous Hasidic musicals, A Chasene Shtetl, A Wedding in Village, in Israel for a month and a half. And it was the most difficult thing I've ever done, going to Israel and doing my father's show. Mm. But it was very rewarding.
Many people might compare you to Joel Grey. Have you heard that?
Yes. I don't know Joel. We met once or twice, but there are similarities. His father was a very famous...
Mickey Katz.
Mickey Katz, a very famous entertainer,
funny.
Although not in Yiddish, but
yeah,
he recorded...
Yeah, but he had some record.
Yeah,
had...
his recordings were very, very funny, full of Yiddishisms, and he was very famous.
And he was a double talker. He talked fast or something?
Yeah. And Joel is an extremely talented. I need no introduction, but he grew up in this sphere as well, up in the Borscht Belt, where I did as well, up in the Catskill Mountains, as so many others have. You know.
So, Mike, if you have two boys now, would you want them to be entertainers?
To tell you the truth, I'm torn between saying yes and no. They both have
That's
talent.
Jewish. Yeah. That's why I have a Talmud.
That's why we have a Talmud. So I guess we should go to the Rebbe and the Rabbi and let him, you know, give us his advice. It's like the lady who came to the Rabbi, and the Gabbai wouldn't let her in. The Rabbi's assistant. He said, "You tell me what you want. Write it down on a piece of paper." And she said, "My husband has left me. I want to know if he's going to come back." He said, "Write it down. The Rabbi's busy. I'll take the paper in and I'll give you the Rabbi's answer." After 5 minutes, he comes back and he says, "The rabbi said not to worry, go home, your husband will return to you, but I'm telling you, he's not going to come back." And she said, "Well, if the rabbi said he's going to come back, why are you saying he's not?" She says, "Because the rabbi saw your piece of paper, I've seen your face." So you should always get to see the rabbi in person. But they have talent, and I wouldn't mind if they were in show business, but since I've been in it all my life, it's a very, very tough profession, probably one of the worst there is. And if you're not totally in love with it and committed and have the talent, you shouldn't be in it. You should know what you're getting into. So if they insist, and besides which, Leon, you can't tell kids what to do anymore. I mean, they'll do what they want to do.
Your feel.
My feelings would, I'd feel very, very good if one of them would continue, because otherwise the dynasty would be broken, you know. I come from a line.
Call out Adam. He seemed to want
to go into
show business.
Yeah.
To be an actor, a singer, a wire tenor, a tap dancer, baseball, everything he does. He's just multi-talented. But we'll be back.
Peace means taking into account the dignity of other people and the fact that there are other people who have certain rights.
Peace in the Middle East basically will come when the clergy in the mosque on Friday preach it, and when the rabbis in the synagogue on Saturday preach it. During the time of Camp David, one, you had political leadership that was able to contain that type of religious fervor. What the country needs is some prescient understanding of what is going to happen in the future.
Tune in when the Leon Chani Report begins a special series on the Israeli-Palestinian question.
Moms everywhere are finding ways to keep kids active and healthy.
Works every time.
Get ideas, get involved, get going at letsmove.gov.
So, I got this new family, and I don't know what it is about this one, but she can't seem to put down that toy all day long. Tap, 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 tap. Oh, and she even talks to it. She talks to that more than she talks to him. What's up, bro? Nice shirt. Who's she talking to? Her mom? She talks to her mom a lot.